College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Negandhi.
Ooh, Athens was rocking on Saturday night. Is it over for Notre Dame when they think about their playoff run? Much to cover here in the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Ivan Maisel is going to join us to get his thoughts on the only undefeated team left in the Pac-12. But first, as he does every single Wednesday, it's great to have David Pollock with us. And so we're going to get to the strangest story in all of college football in a moment and what's going on in Houston with Derek King. But first, I wanted to get your thoughts on Saturday night, that techno show in Athens, that entire experience for you personally and what you saw on the field.
It was nuts. First of all, the atmosphere at Georgia has always been really, really good and really strong and one of the better ones you'll see in college football. But now, I mean, you got some LED lights. It looked like a dance club up there, Kevin. Dude. It was crazy. I mean, just you remember back in the day when you used to play hoops at the gym, and somebody cut the lights off or the power, and it took 35 minutes for the lights to come back on and reheat back up. Like, we're turning stadium lights off in 2 seconds, and then having a dance party, and you got lights everywhere, and it was nuts. I tell you what, I don't know if Georgia wins that game if they don't play at home. I mean, they forced so many false starts, and Notre Dame burns 2 timeouts in the second half that they don't have at the end of the game that they would probably like to have. It was a electric atmosphere. I think Notre Dame proved to people that, again, they're a really good football team. I think Ian Book proved he's a really good football player. And so I think Brian Kelly and the way he manufactures offense is just – it's fun to watch. He's got him a big toy at tight end. He's got big targets all over the field that he can use. He's got Ian Book's scrambling ability, and they use the screen game really well. But it was a good performance by Notre Dame, and I'd like to say, you know, goodbye to Notre Dame.
What? Goodbye to Notre Dame. You did that whole setup.
Football playoff now.
Why goodbye to Notre Dame? Because if they run the table the rest of the way, they'll have one loss.
Okay, so you're telling me you think Notre Dame's still alive.
I'm not telling you that. I'm playing devil's advocate in this scenario because we could see down the road.
Okay.
Let's just play some scenarios here. Let's just say Georgia loses to Alabama in the SEC title game, right? And Alabama beats LSU. So we've got some one-loss teams there in the SEC, and Alabama advances. And you could play the same role here. Alabama beats LSU, and then Georgia beats Alabama, and then Georgia gets in undefeated. Clemson is going to be undefeated. They're in already. So we've got two teams. It's the concept of where's Ohio State here? And if Texas knocks off Oklahoma, right? Okay. Let's just say that's on October 12th, but then Oklahoma beats Texas in the Big 12 championship game. Then you have some one-loss scenarios. Then you have Notre Dame. You have the brand that is Notre Dame. And how well they played against Georgia as that measuring stick. And then they win out the rest of the way. You wouldn't put Notre Dame in?
Against a brutal schedule. I mean, brutal schedule the rest of the way. Like, brutal to our eyeballs. Virginia, Michigan, USC, those are by far the highest caliber of teams that they have left to make a statement. Are you impressed with any of those?
No, I mean, it's just, not at all.
And then you don't win your conference championship. So under your scenario, you got Oklahoma who's going to win a conference championship. SEC is getting one in. Clemson's getting one in. Whoever the next one-loss team is in 100% over Notre Dame. You know what's interesting, Kevin? Last year, end of the season, what was the debate we were having? Is Notre Dame as a zero-loss team a team that could get passed as a zero-loss team? Notre Dame with one loss, do I think they're a good football team? You daggum right I do. I think they're a really good football team. Do I think they're out of the college football playoff? I do.
But you just made a fantastic case for Notre Dame in your opening remarks that if that game was played at a neutral site or even in South Bend, you don't think Georgia wins that game because that environment was the difference for Notre Dame.
I think the environment was big time difference. I think Georgia, and listen, Georgia had some opportunities where they should have salted the game away and could have salted the way a game. By the way, does anybody put up better numbers than Jake Fromm in a more unassuming way?
Yep.
I mean, you look up and you just go, man, Jake's playing okay. He's doing good. He's managing the offense in 20 of 26, 11 of 12 in the first half. By the way, every incompletion he threw was a catchable ball. I mean, legit had a chance to be caught was either could have been a PI or his receivers could have come down with it. Just kind of ho-hum, unassuming. You know, a couple things to keep in mind for watching this game. You know, Georgia, after the second play defensively, is on their third and fourth string cornerbacks the rest of the game. So I think that kind of affects what you're able to do from a blitz pressure stack package, because you don't, Kevin, you don't want to leave your third, fourth, and now fifth corner on islands and play man coverage the whole entire game. That would be a mistake. Georgia's right tackle, Isaiah Wilson, who's a, you know, second round pick, could work his way maybe even higher. He's a sophomore, really, really good football player. He didn't play the first half until Solomon Kinley, their best guard, gets hurt. So they had a lot of injury that I feel like they dealt with and they handled really, really well. But, you know, the bottom line is Notre Dame is good. I have no doubts about that. Impressed with them. Always impressed with their discipline. Always impressed with how they function and how they call plays. But you're talking about a college football committee that is going to be a one of show me. Where are your big wins? Where's your conference championship? Where's your chance to make a statement at the end of the season? They don't have that.
Okay, so I want to tell you this. I'll preface by saying that if Notre Dame were to make the playoff, that I would have my doubts on how they would perform, considering, you know, the other teams that you would leave out. And that would be hypothetically, like, we play those scenarios. If that leaves out a one loss Oklahoma, or maybe a one loss Texas, or that leaves out a one loss, I don't know. Let's just play another scenario out, yeah, like an SEC team. Could be Georgia,
Cal,
LSU. Yeah, we'll see if Cal gets that one loss on Friday night against the Fighting Herm Edwards. Considering the Pac-12, who knows what's going to happen in a game like that. Yeah. To me, you know, I just go back to Notre Dame. They were in that game, and if Ian Book makes one or two plays on that final drive while he was feeling the pressure, they really impressed me. They were great. I think Fromm made a phenomenal pass to Cager in the corner. And it just shows you the kid is just so good in big moments. He handles everything like a professional quarterback, and that's why he beat out Eason and Fields. But you and I can make the case for all these other teams. It will be interesting to see how the committee looks at the brand that is Notre Dame. If we play this entire scenario out the way we just did, and I think the brand that is Notre Dame plays a role.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I think it plays a role in fans' eyes. I don't think it plays a No, I don't think it plays a role in committee's eyes whatsoever. I don't think they give a crap about what brand you are. I think they're gonna. I mean, why is Ohio State left out of the college football playoff then? You know, that's a huge brand. You could argue one of the biggest brands that there is. They should be in. I mean, I just.
But you can argue that Notre Dame,
I think the committee changes every year, but I think the committee are going to look at.
You can argue that the Notre Dame brand is the biggest one when they are the best, or they're in that conversation of being in the top five.
Yeah, but that's – Kevin, are we talking about, like, the last 20 years, 30 years?
No.
That's not the case anymore.
No, no.
And
I'm
that
not
has
talking
changed
about that. No.
Dramatically. Like, that's when you, that's when you grew up, and that's when you were a young pup. You know, you're what, 50, 60 right now? So you experienced the great days of the Notre Dame.
That Newt Rockne, right? You're going to take
but,
me all the
know,
way
my
back?
My generation doesn't know Notre Dame being any good. Yeah, absolutely. My generation doesn't know doesn't consider that to be the case. I think Notre Dame's a really solid team. I don't put them in the categories of the Bamas and the USC's and all those. I mean, I know it's been a hot minute since that was the case.
Yeah. Okay. Well, listen, and I'm actually with you in this entire argument. I'm just playing the other side and being mentally prepared that you and I will be having a conversation on the Who's In show the day of the release, the final release of the rankings, and we're going to be debating a one-loss Notre Dame team versus a one-loss SEC team, Big 12 team, Big 10 team, I don't know, whatever, Pac-12 team. We're going to be in a conversation. I promise
well, and if
you.
That one-loss team is Georgia, guess what? Notre Dame's already gone.
Yeah, because
Notre
Georgia
Dame's
beat
gone
them.
Because they lost to Georgia. So
and back to
if it's somebody else in the SEC. If it's LSU, then LSU has a bigger win at a conference with Texas, and it's just going to be – it's a tough battle.
And back to Saturday night. And if people are wondering at home, you didn't lose your voice because you were losing your mind in Athens. You're a guy that played in front of those fans. You're a guy that understands the environment in Georgia football. Was that the best environment you've ever seen for the Bulldogs when it comes to Georgia football in a big game?
Oh, no doubt. Not even close. I mean, it wasn't even close. It was, like I said, it literally had a lot to do with the outcome of the game, causing the false starts. They got those new LED lights, and it just changes everything too, because you can strobe it and you can do the music with it. And again, we're all searching for this in college football now.
Yep.
We're searching for ways to engage fans, and we're searching for ways to keep them, you know, entertained in the game. And you're going to see more T-shirts being thrown out, and you're going to see more, you know, games in between the games and in the commercial breaks, and better Wi-Fi and all that stuff. And they're just, you know, their system is one of the coolest ones I've ever seen, and the fans loved it. You could tell, and they were crazy. And this is doesn't have a lot of new history with Notre Dame. I mean, a couple years ago, obviously, it was a big game in the title run for Georgia early in the season. But before that, they hadn't played since it was for a national title in, you know, 81. But it's starting to be, you know, it's like you said, the brand of Notre Dame really got the Georgia fans crunk, and they were excited, and it was nothing. I've never seen an atmosphere like that in Athens.
You know what you're going to do? You're going to see this now fall where major programs around the country playing in prime time, because, you know, you're talking about engaging college football fans. This was also a show for recruits, because this is the arms race. Hey, my facility's bigger than your facility. I could do this. I could do that. I could do this. Well, look what we can do in a night game in prime time. Our red helmets are now different colors, and they're shining, and the whole place is super dark. And look, come to Athens, and this is what's going to happen, right? You can see this playing out throughout the SEC now, right? How do we make this show play out, aside from the actual football, to recruits watching somewhere, right, or on a visit in this environment? Couldn't you see this play out with other major programs now falling in place and doing something like this?
Well, first of all, it's always about that.
Yep.
Kirby Smart 100% loves the fans and thinks about the fans, but the first thing you think about is recruiting. The first thing you think about is what these kids think about your uniforms. You think about what they think about your locker room, your weight room, all that stuff, you know, matters. That's why they spend hundreds of millions of dollars, everybody, on indoor facilities, and whoever did the last one in LSU with their, you know, locker room, and everybody took pictures, and it was just a wow, wow, wow moment. And then all of a sudden, you know, somebody else is going to try to top it. And so that's part of the business. It's going to be the case in everywhere, every bit of college football, always.
We'll be back in a minute to talk about De'Aaron King's decision to redshirt with Pollock. But first, a word from Allstate, because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. Now back to the show. All right, now let's get to something that's changing in college football, and I think it's the power to the players. We're seeing that more and more, and I think the strangest story so far this season, and the season's still young, is De'Aaron King deciding to redshirt this season at Houston, and Dana Holgorsen, first-year head coach at Houston, saying he's not giving up on the season, even though he just lost one of the best quarterbacks in the country. And his team is 1-3, and this concept of redshirting, playing those four games and then just saying, I'm not going to transfer, I'm going to still stay here and practice with the team, but I'm not going to play because I'm going to be a fifth-year senior. What's your initial thoughts on this story surrounding King, surrounding Holgorsen, and how this is going to play out the rest of the way?
First of all, whenever you see it, it's just like skipping bowl games. Whenever you see it, we live in a copycat world. It's going to happen elsewhere. It's not just going to be a one-time thing in Houston. This is a trend. This is an empowerment. This is a power play by the players. You know, players don't have a ton of say and a ton of power in all this stuff. And, you know, you saw Kelly Bryant's move last year for the betterment of himself, and you've seen it pay off and have a little bit of success. This is literally, my team's 1-3. We stink. If I want to play in the NFL, I have to develop as a passer. I have to get better and continue to do that. Well, how can I do that? I can do that for the next year and continue to get reps, get better, learn my reads stronger, do all this stuff, and then come back next year and maybe my team's better. And by the way, it's kind of overlooked. his second leading receiver, Keith Corbin, is doing the same exact thing. Yep. So it's not just a De'Aaron King thing. This is like a Houston thing to go, okay, this season's done. We're 1-3. We're terrible. We're going to punt on this year. We're going to redshirt, and we're going to come back. And, I mean, just I was fascinated by it, blown away. I know it's going to be just, you know, I'm an old school guy. All the old school people are going to hate it. The new school people are going to love it, and you're going to kind of fall one side or the other. What were your thoughts on it?
I'm stunned. And I, you know what my initial thoughts were, especially going back to Lincoln Riley and his comments coming off the opener when they faced Oklahoma, where he called De'Aaron King one of the top five quarterbacks in the country and that he's fantastic. And my first thought was, I think De'Aaron King is playing really smart this scenario. Let's think, keep this in mind too. This, Dana Holgorsen is his third head coach in college. He's had four offensive coordinators. Yep. I think he's taken control of the situation. Yep. There's a rule. He's following the rule. And he's also being very, very aware of the situation that if Lincoln Riley decides to, all right, I'm going to coach in the NFL. Jerry Jones is going to write me a big check, and I'm leaving. De'Aaron King is deciding, like, I don't want to say I'm transferring to a school and the coach leaves. I'm going to sit here and wait, and then I'm going to assess in January and look at the lay of the land and who's coaching where and what's going to best suit me in my situation because I've dealt with all these different coaches, and now I want to control and pick the coach I want to play for. That's how I view it. And I'm okay with that.
Well, and keep in mind, too, when you enter the transfer portal, you don't have the ability to stay with your team and work on your craft.
Yes.
You don't have a destination yet. You don't have anywhere to go. You're kind of stuck on your own. So, you know, by redshirting, he's now given himself an opportunity to still practice, to still get better, to still work on his habits, and still continue to evolve as a player. So, it's interesting. One thing to all the people out there that say De'Aaron King is selfish, I understand your thought process. But one thing I'd like to point out about the young man, when he was a freshman, he played punt returner. He played special teams. He played wide receiver for his team and for the success of his team. He sacrificed a couple years of quarterback status and a couple years to play quarterback to come in and give his team the best chance to win. So when you start talking about selfishness, he's also shown that he's very unselfish. Now he's taking control and made a play for De'Aaron King now, but I just don't want people to point at him and say, like, this is a me guy and this is how he's been, because he has sacrificed for his team.
And by the way, as you mentioned, the wide receiver, Corbin, Holgorsen yesterday was very honest, saying they've also discussed redshirting other players. It may not be just two guys with Houston. So my angle with this is, if you're Houston, you're watching these players, you know, follow the rules. No one's breaking any rules. They're following the rules now that the NCAA implemented a year ago. But you just spent all this money to bring in Dana Holgorsen, and you're 1-3. And you, what's the message inside the locker room for Dana? How does he keep the team
together? That's the message.
Right?
That's what sucks about this whole thing. And listen, you can say whatever you want. You can fall on whatever side you want. There's also a bunch of seniors and a bunch of juniors and a bunch of kids on that team that have fought their guts out for a lot of years and finally got a chance to shine. And now you're taking away good players from my team and my ability to shine and my ability to win and my ability to succeed. So, listen, there's two sides to every coin. And when somebody makes a decision and for themselves, and, you know, it's going to affect other pieces of the team. And, you know, not having De'Aaron King, when you're a wide receiver in this offense, it stinks. It's going to be less than good for you. It's not going to be near as exciting. It's a lot of things are going to take a hit, but, you know, it's just part of the nature of the beast of the new rules, and it's part of the unintended consequences that always are going to happen.
We'll see how this plays out. They got North Texas next, and De'Aaron King a year ago responsible for 50 touchdowns in this offense this year with Dana Holgorsen, which I think a lot of people were anticipating was going to be lights out. They have a terrible defense. You were thinking that he was going to maybe try to match those numbers of 50 total touchdowns. He was on pace for just 36 as they had a rough start with just one win in their first four games. All right, let's do this as we do it every Wednesday. I love that you jump in and you watch a ton of film on Monday and Tuesday. Maybe that's how you lost your voice, as you were screaming while looking at the tape. Which unit so far is turning heads when you watch the tape that you just broke down heading into the week?
I can give you a couple things. One thing, Wisconsin just absolutely curb stomped Michigan, and it was emphatic. It was ugly. It was not any better on the tape. And I mean, you gotta love what Wisconsin does. First of all, did you see the hippo formation? This is probably my favorite thing in college football now. Like 32 personnel in football. Teaching moment. When they hold up those big signs that say, you know, 10, a big 10 on it for the defense.
Yeah.
A big 20 on it, a big 22, 23. All they're doing is telling the defense what the personnel is of the offense. So that means 32 means three running backs and two tight ends. That's what that means. So I know what they do out of these formations, and I can go ahead and get a thought process, and I match their personnel. Well, the hippo formation is 32 personnel, but you have an O lineman as a tight end, and then you have two O linemen as fullbacks for Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and then you got Jonathan Taylor behind them. So you got over 2,500 pounds of beef in front of the best running back in college football. It was awesome. I mean, literally, I thought Wisconsin setting the tone. The first drive, 4th and 1. Don't care. On my own 34, needless to say, Kevin. I mean, way backed up.
So much disrespect.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy the level. First of all, another observation, too, is watching Michigan's defense and how light in the pants they are. They're not very big. I'm just so used to them being big, physical guys up front that could also penetrate. They're a smaller group, and they have to stunt more and move more, and we're at a gap a lot. And you saw that with that. Wisconsin and Paul Chris do such a great job of developing their guys, and they do such a good job on offense, and they run jet sweeps, and they take shots with Cephas, and they run the jet sweep to A.J. Taylor, who's a speedy guy for them. They ran the speed option, by the way. Like, they literally dabble their toes in a little bit of everything, but it was amazing to watch Wisconsin punch Michigan in the mouth repeatedly, and there was no response from Michigan. That to me was something that I studied, and I was just like, wow, that was not a good look for Michigan.
So how do you view Wisconsin now? Are they a playoff contender in your mind?
After watching the tape, I like what I see from them offensively. I like what I see from them defensively. Zach Brown, by the way, number 56, go watch him on tape. Go watch him play. Good God, the kid's a stud. I mean, he's unbelievable fast. Here's the thing about Wisconsin. They got fast guys on defense. They're not just slow. I think it might be their most athletic secondary I've seen them have, and they got some backers that can really, really run. Offensively, I'll say this. Jack Cohn made some big plays and made some easy plays. I don't know if he can make the hard plays yet, and that's what I want to see from them. I'm buying them for a top 10 team. I'm buying them for being a hard out every week, and you know they're going to not beat themselves, and they're going to be extremely disciplined. I don't know yet about the playoffs. I'm going to need to see more from Jack Cohn. I liked some of the stuff I saw, even when he ran a little boot in the red zone inside the goal line and he lowered his shoulder and tried to run somebody over. I love all that. I like his intangibles. It'll just be interesting when they do play, when somebody does play man on him and somebody is physical enough up front to limit Jonathan Taylor. I think it's the same question mark for Wisconsin that we've had in the past, and if that comes to fruition.
Yeah, Bond is really good in the middle of that unit for that defense. Here's, for me, though.
He's an animal, yeah, bro.
For me, like, you talk about the big test. It's October 12th. Michigan State's defense. I'm not expecting anything from their offense. I want to see how that Wisconsin offense matches up against Michigan State's defense.
Yeah, I completely agree. When I watched the tape, that's the first thing I thought about in my head was who can physically match up,
right? Yep.
With Wisconsin up front. And I thought about the Big Ten, and I thought about Michigan State, and I thought about Ohio State. Those are the two teams that, you know, came to mind from a defensive line standpoint that I thought could really make life hard on them. Penn State's another one, by the way. I think Penn State's good enough up front, athletic enough up front to give them big problems. But, yeah, that's when we'll see that come to fruition. Now, listen, I what do you feel about that offense, though, on the other side from Michigan State? That's
nothing.
Always a question mark at
exactly.
best, too, on the other side. So, I mean, you know, that's in the end, just like why me and you both picked Wisconsin to win this game. One has Jonathan Taylor and one doesn't.
Yep.
And Jonathan Taylor can give you extra first downs because he's so good at making people miss, squaring his shoulders, and he can also hit the home run like nobody's business. By the way, two things I love about Jonathan Taylor in the open field. One, you can see he's a track guy because you can see the way he runs. His arms get way up high, like you can tell he's a track guy. Two, and this is a tiny nuance from watching, I'm just telling you that it's something that's very different and very unique. He can use his eyes and his head to manipulate defenders better than most people that I've ever seen. And when I say that, he'll catch a ball and he'll start running, Kevin, and he'll run. And he knows he's going left, but he turns his whole head to the right just to move his vision and his eyes this way, almost like a head fake or a, you know, crossover in basketball. You step and jab step one direction, but he doesn't do it with his whole body. He just does it with his head and leans and gets guys leaning one direction and then cuts really quickly the other direction. So, I mean, the Big Ten's going to be, it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be interesting, but Penn State's offense will have to get better. Right now, the Buckeyes look like the most complete team, and then Wisconsin just said, hey, bud, don't forget about me.
Yeah, and to me, if they get any consistency from Cone, if he can make a couple throws and you got that guy in the backfield, then watch out for Wisconsin. That showdown against Ohio State, October 26th, at the Shoe, cannot wait, but we've got more things to figure out here when it comes to how they're going to handle Michigan State. To me, that's going to be like a 22-19 or 22-15 score with a bunch of field goals, and it's just going to be an ugly, typical Big Ten type of game where it's smash mouth. And I want to see how Wisconsin handles the adversity on the road later in October. All right, so we talked about the unit. I want to talk about a player because I got to be honest with you. We started doing this a couple of weeks ago, and the cool thing was you put Nolan Smith on my radar for Georgia, and I couldn't stop watching him on Saturday night against Notre Dame. I was like, where's the kid? Where's the kid? Where's the kid? And he was everywhere. Yep. So who's the under-the-radar player we should be talking about this coming weekend for the rest of the season that you're seeing on film?
Okay, I took a different approach this week. This guy has been talked about a little bit, but with what the production is, he should be talked about a lot. Evan Weaver from Cal. This dude is an adult. He's an animal, okay? And Kevin, we're not going to – nobody focuses on Cal and their defense and how good they are. I wish more people appreciate it. First of all, there's two things to think about real quick. He wears number 89 and he's an inside linebacker. That to me is curious. Like, that's the first thing that sticks out that's curious. Kevin, he's got 63 tackles on the season. 63. That's 10 more than anybody else in football, and that's 21 more than anybody else in FBS.
Wow.
21 more.
You did your research here.
He is a tackling machine. Dude's a tackling machine. He's all over the field. He's got bad intentions. He popped off of the mouth after the Ole Miss game, which I love. I mean, you talk about a defense in Cal that every year now has been unbelievable since Wilcox came over. And, you know, you saw him, by the way, at Wisconsin years ago and Boise State, and always led great defenses. We talk a lot about Cal's secondary, and they get a lot of respect, and they should. Evan Weaver's an adult. He's one of the most fun players to watch in college football. Starts with the number 89 and then goes and permeates through to all of his numbers and all of his tackles, his physicality and his attitude. He's a lot of fun to watch. If you get to peep on a Cal game, and Friday night obviously will be a good chance, watch 89. He's fun.
Well, he's going to stand out, right, when you look at the number 89. I think that's the oddest number I've ever seen for a linebacker. I mean, you made a point of it. I mean, you're 6'3", yeah. 245, and you're wearing 89. All right, can't wait to see
strange,
that.
Isn't it?
Very strange. And, yeah. And then how do you view Cal? Well, while we're talking about it, if you're watching this young man, do you take anything away from, you know, what we saw from Garbers and beating an SEC team at 11 a.m. local time going on the road? How do you view the Bears and Wilcox in the Pac-12?
Well, and that's one of the things you just said is important, because it is important to understand body clocks and getting up that early. Like, don't get it twisted. I don't think Ole Miss is any good. I don't think they are. I mean, I don't think anybody does. I don't think anybody's under that confusion. But at least Garbers gave you a little bit of hope, you know, and they scored some daggum points, which for Cal, points are not always the easiest thing to come by. But Ole Miss doesn't have a good defense. They scored 28. But remember against Washington, they scored 20. But they haven't scored in the 30s yet. And that's a tough proposition. And as good as their defense is, it'll be interesting to watch them this week, because their secondary is legit and they're going to be able to lock people down and have fun. But can they catch Jaden Daniels? Because that dude's an athlete. You know, he's like, you know, you got to keep that. You better keep him in the pocket and not let him scramble around. But their first, you know, a test in a more explosive offense in Arizona State and a good defense in Arizona State, I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona State won this game. And then the Cal love, you know, goes away. Cal is not a team that can sustain this. They're not going to be a team that's 7-0 and undefeated in the Pac-12. They don't have enough firepower to put themselves in that conversation, especially with as many good teams as there are in the Pac-12.
Yeah, because after Arizona State, watch out Oregon on the road. Then they're on the road at Utah. They got Washington State at home, USC at home, but it feels like this Cal team could steal another one, and they've already hurt Washington's chances, but they could do some serious damage on the Ducks. Pollock, you guys are going to be in Lincoln, Ohio State, Nebraska. We're going to talk Friday and break down the top games. Appreciate you joining us. Rest up that sore throat.
Thanks, Bob.
We'll be back in a minute with Ivan Maizel, but first a word from Goodyear. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Now back to the show. As he does every Wednesday, great to have Ivan Maizel join us here on the College Football Podcast. Ivan, so Pollock and I talked about it briefly here. De'Ara King, it's the strangest story in college football so far in this young season. What do you make of this situation, as well as what Dana Holgorsen is saying about moving forward with this 1-3 team?
Well, there's so many facets to this, Kevin, that are interesting. You know, it's one of those things that happens that seems perfectly logical when you look back and figure out how we got here. But if you just said to somebody, you know, when this rule was instituted, that, well, of course, guys are going to play four games and then decide to stay out the rest of the year so that they can just practice and get better for the next year, they would have looked at you like, what? Yeah. So it's if we take De'Ara King at his what he said at face value and what Holgorsen is saying, then, okay, this is a long-term play and we're going to get better. And, you know, I want to develop a program with fifth-year seniors. And De'Ara bought into that. And I remember when fifth-year seniors were not only a valuable commodity, but a not rare commodity. So they are valuable. It's just people kind of let them go in this rush to get guys on the field and in this rush to get guys through school 12 months a year and graduated in 3 or 4 years. There, you know, once upon a time, you counted a team's efficacy by how many fifth-year seniors it had. And so in that sense, okay. You know, this play makes sense, but man, you know, first of all, you're worried. I would be worried that, you know, De'Ara King's head will get turned when the year is over and Oklahoma is looking for a transfer quarterback, among others.
If Lincoln's still there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Having had its third straight Heisman winner who is a transfer. I don't know. It does sort of grate against that sensibility that you do what's best to win now. And there's just some competing tenets of football bashing one another in this deal, and it's kind of hard to wrap your arms around.
I'm just trying to figure a lot of things out as they travel on the road at North Texas and the concept of, you know, Holgorsen's suggesting that practice is great. If you're doubting this team that we've given up, you haven't come to practice. But at the same time, it just feels like for a coach, he has to be supportive, because who knows, this could go sideways on him if he's not supportive, if King changes his mind. But for a coach to just be like, yeah, okay, we're going to move forward on this, and the idea that we have you know, fifth-year senior is going to make us better next year, the messaging inside that locker room has to be so awkward.
Well, potentially, but, you know, the other part of what I'm thinking about in terms of how we got here, and looking back, it seems perfectly obvious, you know, that whole message of everybody's sacrifices for the team, the foundation, and people look at that as the very foundation not only of college football, but really of team sports. You know, that's what we've all been taught from the time we were little kids. And yet, what's the message we hear over and over again about college football now? That the players are doing all the work, leave whenever they want, that the coaches are, you know, making financial decisions for, in their own best interest. You know, how is a player not hearing that? You know, how can you not hear that? So if a player acts that way, how can we act surprised, you know, we got in this mess in the first place?
The power play. And we'll see how this plays out. I just be wary of, you know, Lincoln Riley, especially with his comments after the Oklahoma game in the opener. He was very high on Derek King, called him a top five quarterback, if not even making that list shorter, calling him fantastic. And for me, you know, playing this out, if I'm Derek King, I'm like, well, I want to stay here. And then I'll see if Lincoln Riley doesn't take the Cowboys job in January. And if he's going to still be around, then I will reassess some things, right? You just can't fault him when we look at the power that players are now getting the chance to execute in this day and age of college football. We'll be back in a minute with much more from Ivan to talk about who's the favorite in the Pac-12 right now. But first, a word from Cintas. More than 1 million businesses trust Cintas to help them open their doors with confidence. Get Cintas and get ready for the workday. Learn how Cintas can help get your business ready at Cintas.com. Cintas provides a wide range of products and services that enhances a customer's image and helps keep their facilities and employees clean, safe, and looking their best. They service fire protection equipment, deliver and stock restroom supplies, and make sure your facilities are clean and ready. Its customer base is about as broad as it gets, including hotel chains, airlines, college universities, healthcare facilities, retailers, manufacturers, and local car repair shops. For more than 90 years, the company has worked to help businesses big and small look more professional and run more smoothly. Focus on what you do best and leave the rest to Cintas. Cintas currently employs more than 43,000 people and operates over 500 locations across the U.S. and Canada. Cintas is a proud Fortune 500 company that is involved in over 400 charitable causes and community events. Now back to the show. Let's talk a little bit about the action that we saw on the field and what's coming up later this week. Cal is the only undefeated team left in the Pac-12. And if you had that back in August, then you shouldn't be doing anything but staying in the desert for the rest of your life. Because not so much of a surprise that they've been successful early on, because we know about their defense. It's just that they're the last team standing in a conference that featured three or four other teams that many felt could win it all out. When I talk about winning the conference, they're coming off an 11 a.m. local start at Ole Miss to now facing an Arizona State team that's coming off their first loss. And that game is on a Friday night. And when you see Cal and you see what's in front of them and you see this conference, how does this translate?
Well, only the Pac-12 could arrange to have its, you know, flag bearer at this point, you know, play one less game, you know, have one less day to get ready. You can't even make that up. I am skeptical of Cal's chances on Friday night for that reason. You know, although, I mean, you can make the case that as far, you know, because of the early kickoff, they got home Saturday night and the game Friday is at Cal. So, you know, they didn't have to travel and then turn around and come back to the airport. So, it may not seem as bad as it first looks, but still, it feels like the Pac-12 can't get out of its own way.
And they're going to hopefully give us another Pac-12 After Dark moment, because we've had plenty of them, and there's nothing better than seeing a wild. I don't think we're going to see, you know, a 67-63. Shootout when Justin Wilcox's defense has done a fantastic job. And we know what Herm has done on that defensive side at Arizona State. They've been very, very impressive in the last, let's just say 16, 17 games that Herm's been the head coach there. You don't think that Cal survives this weekend undefeated? As you look at the rest of the Pac-12, who survives here? Because I'm impressed. When you see Auburn each week, you come back to that Oregon game and you're like, okay, this actually makes the Ducks look really good. And I really like Washington. I think they're going to have a big test, but it's at home with USC in town. How do you look at the Pac-12 right now, and who's the favorite?
I still like Oregon, Kevin. I feel as if, as you say, you know, the Auburn loss is perhaps a badge of honor, but at least not a bad loss, to say the least. I really liked the way Oregon took care of business at Stanford Saturday. Stanford is not the Stanford it has been for the last decade, but Oregon controlled the game on both sides of the ball, really from the get-go. And, you know, 21-6 doesn't look all that impressive, but you hold any Stanford offense to 6 points. That's, you know, with KJ Costello there, that's a good thing. And I feel as if the way Oregon is winning, too, with physical play and good defense, that will go a long way in that conference. So yeah. I still like the Ducks.
Cristobal has done a fantastic job to bring that toughness, especially on the front lines. Last week, felt like we learned something about Georgia. Felt like we learned a little bit about Notre Dame. We learned a little bit about, well, I think we learned a lot about Wisconsin. We learned a lot about Michigan. We keep on learning about Auburn. We learned a lot about UCF. This weekend, when you look at some of the matchups, like the Washington-USC game, like Virginia-Notre Dame, and Ohio State-Nebraska, what do you want to learn from these games?
Well, to me, week four, we're still not entirely sure whether, you know, whether somebody is really good or the other team is really not good. I mean, I mean, it's certainly Wisconsin and Michigan were clearer about who they are, but, you know, I'm still a little hesitant to declare anything about either one. So I think those three games you bring up are great examples of how these are sort of, you know, I don't know if elimination games is the right word, but, we'll know whoever wins this game is serious and is a serious contender in their conference, if nothing else, and whoever loses, we can all wave goodbye to. And I like Washington over USC, you know, they're home, and I just think they've played more solid football. I could watch that USC-Utah video another five times and still not figure out how Utah lost the game, having watched it Friday night. Ohio State, we've all been gobsmacked by the way Justin Fields has settled right into that offense, but they really haven't played a team that can challenge them. And having to go, Nebraska is not really ready for championship contention, judging by the results of the first, you know, third of the season. But mm-hmm. on the other hand, you got to go into Lincoln. So, you know, that's a test for the Buckeyes. And Virginia Notre Dame, I just feel like, you know, for the Irish, after a emotional physical road loss, and clearly Virginia was looking past ODU last week toward this game, I think if the Irish can somehow come back from all of that and beat a team as good as Virginia, that would tell us a lot about Notre Dame.
Now, you brought up something about Wisconsin and Michigan that we learned a little bit from both teams. What else do you need to learn from Wisconsin right now to make you a believer, especially the way that offense looked, especially the way that defense looked? Does your answer, is it based on your, well, it's Michigan, and right now we have no idea what Michigan is.
Exactly. That's it.
Gotcha.
That's it. I mean, I loved, you know, I was thinking about the difference in quarterback play the Badgers have gotten
yep.
this year. Jack Cohn seems like he's clearly a step above Alex Hornibrook and the problems they had a year ago. So that's significant to me. My biggest question about Wisconsin right now is on the O-line and why the way Biddish spells his name, why is it not pronounced badass? And, I mean, Notre Dame did that with Joe Theismann, right?
Yeah, they did.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's a real marketing opportunity missed there by the Badgers.
Yeah, we'll have a chance to talk to Tyler one day down the road and find out. Yeah, because that line, I mean, Paul Chris has done a fantastic job. Now, on the other side, what do you make of Jim Harbaugh and where Michigan is in year five, coming off the bye, and how they were thoroughly dominated and Wisconsin didn't blink on both sides of the ball? They were not afraid. And then the fundamental issues keep on coming up with the Wolverines in holding on to the football and making tackles.
Yeah, exactly. A year ago, I wrote a story about how what a terrific defensive coordinator Don Brown is. Mm-hmm. And ever since that story ran, they have not played good defense, and they just look slow. I don't know. Has this whole revolution in the game, snuck past Jim Harbaugh? I mean, what he did at Stanford was brilliant in the sense that he and David Shaw has continued it and playing that, tight end heavy. We're going to, they call it intellectual brutality at Stanford, playing that traditional physical game. But for some reason, it's just not working in the way the Big Ten is constructed right now. They just look slow. And the offense under Josh Gattis looks just not very effective. And, I don't know enough about the difference in what they were doing last year to this and how they're being taught. But, if you can't even hold on to the ball, if they can't even get ball security down, I mean, that's just a symptom more than a illness to me. But, all of it together, you got to figure out, you got to imagine, what is going on.
Three games so far this season for Michigan. They've lost seven fumbles. A year ago, all season, they lost a total of three. And you mentioned Don Brown. This defense hasn't been the same since Ohio State put up 62 points. Tomorrow night, as we continue to celebrate 150 years of college football, that is, when I say tomorrow night, Thursday night on ESPN, you got a new episode, the Greatest Inspiring Moments episode. What more can you tell us about this episode?
Well, what we've tried to do, Kevin, with all of the greatest episodes is twin them up to the American Game episode from Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. And we covered integration on the show Tuesday night. And to us, it was not a very long leap to get to inspiring moments. And we look at the history of the game, and it's everything from John Cappelletti's Heisman speech in 1973, which was a tearjerker about his ill younger brother, Joey, to Ernie Davis winning the Heisman, the first African-American to win the Heisman in 1961 at Syracuse. And Brandon Burlsworth at Arkansas, the walk-on who became an All-American and then died in an automobile accident right after the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jake Olson, the blind long snapper at USC, we found and discuss and debate moments that are not only memorable but inspirational to everybody who's a fan of the game, and it's a fun episode.
Looking forward to it once again. That is on ESPN TV side, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. College Football: The Greatest Inspiring Moments. That episode, Thursday night on ESPN. Ivan, always a pleasure having you here with us on the podcast.
Thanks, Kevin.
Appreciate Pollock and Ivan for joining us here today. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, Goodyear, and Cintas. Wondering what Vegas thinks about this week's games? Check out Stanford Steve and the Bear Podcast as they break down this week's games and make their picks. Remember to subscribe to Stanford Steve and the Bear, the College Football Podcast with Herb Street and Pollock, wherever you get your podcasts. Big thanks to our producer, Gabe Bassane. Coming up on Friday, Pollock makes his picks for week five, and Gene Wojciechowski will join us with much more on his latest book surrounding Bob Stoops and maybe the thought of Bob returning to college football. We'll ask Gino about that.